Fighting in the Arena, Analyzing Skeletons of Roman Gladiators, Part 1. Maybe you've also seen the movie The Game Changers from 2018 from UFC fighter James Wilkes. The premise of the movie was him finding out that ancient Roman gladiators ate very little to no meat. Before this, James Wilkes was sure that animal protein was essential for the upkeep of energy levels, the growth of muscles, and the healing from injuries. But after reading recent research papers on this subject, he was convinced that the gladiators had a predominantly plant-based diet during training and fights in the arena, which in turn led him to promote a vegan diet for modern-day top athletes in his movie. But is this actually true? Were gladiators, quote, vegan? In this episode, we look at primary sources, results from analyzed bone samples, and talk with Dr. Fabian Kantz, the researcher who wrote the paper James Wilkes based The Game Changers on, and who is actually featured in his movie alongside people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example. Here's already a teaser of our interesting conversation.
Plinius Naturalis Historia, he mentioned that the fighters after the fight to reduce their muscle pain supplement an ash drink. And I think ash drink fits perfectly because ash is just the mineral which is left over after burning. And today, if you go in an apothec or a drugstore, and you buy some fizzy calcium, magnesium tablets for you after sport, it's pretty much the same.
But before we get into their diet, who actually were gladiators and how did one end up in the arena? Basically, gladiators were mainly made up of prisoners of war, slaves, and condemned offenders. The Roman jurisdiction forced people to fight in the arena for crimes like murder, robbery, or defilement of a temple. The sentencing varied depending on the offense. Damnatus ad gladium meant that offenders would meet their doom from a sword by a professional gladiator, others from wild animals with the sentence damnatus ad bestias. Unarmed and mostly lacking any training, they had no chance of surviving. There was, however, a third possibility to be sent to a gladiatorial school, damnatus ad ludum. After one or two years of training in the ludus, the gladiator school, a convict was to fight in the arena for some 3 years. If, by the end of this term, he was still alive, he could be awarded a wooden sword called rudis as a sign of his liberation. There was even a number of people volunteering to be gladiators, probably looking for fame and fortune. But being mostly sentenced offenders, gladiators inhabited tiny, crowded cells in the ludus. Trainees were coached by doctores, generally ex-gladiators themselves, and the weapons used in training were blunt, often made of wood, weighing twice as much as real fighting ones. After months of training, the fighters were divided into different categories with different armaments and fighting styles. Here's an overview of five of the most popular types of gladiators, often depicted on ancient mosaics, graffiti on walls in Pompeii, or even popular movies like Spartacus or Gladiator with Russell Crowe, for example. The Trax was equipped with a big helmet, small rectangular shield, and high leg guards. His sword arm was protected with a padded sleeve called manica, often made of cloth or leather. His weapon was a crooked sword. This unusual form made it especially effective against the large shield of the Murmillo, the usual opponent of the Thrax. The Murmillo had a large decorated helmet with grills that protected his eye openings. The left shin was protected by a short leg guard and the sword arm again by a padded sleeve. The Murmillo bore a large rectangular shield, a copy of the Roman legionary's scutum, which could weigh up to 8 kilograms. He was armed with a short sword. The total weight of his equipment is estimated to be up to 18 kilograms. Another type of gladiator typically facing off against the Murmillo fighter was the Hoplomachus, who was armed with a lance and a small round shield. In addition, he also carried a short sword for close combat. His legs were protected by two high leg guards, and he also wore a padded sleeve on his sword arm. We come to another pair of gladiators typically facing off against each other, the Secutor and the Retiarius. The helmet of the Secutor type of gladiator was especially thick and heavy. Examples found in Pompeii weighed up to 5 kilograms, making them around twice as heavy as the ones used by Roman legionaries. Vision for the Secutor was made possible by two small round openings, but breathing must have been difficult because of the lack of breathing holes. Armed with the same big shield as the Murmillo and a short sword, he had to try to force a quick decision against his opponent, the lightly armored and highly mobile Retiarius. This explains his name, Secutor, or Pursuer in English. Finally, the Retiarius was one of the most popular types of gladiators. His distinctive weaponry consisted of a net and trident. Only a metal shoulder guard and padding on the left arm offered him little protection. He also carried a short sword for fighting at close quarters. His light equipment was compensated by his mobility, which he could put to good use against the Secutor, who was heavily armored but seriously restricted by his heavy helmet. All right, I hope this quick overview gave you some idea of the equipment and fighting styles commonly used by gladiators. But to come back to our original question, during all that intense training, what did they actually eat to remain in fighting form? From Roman authors, we know that they consumed a specific diet. This gladiatorium saginum, gladiators' food, included mainly barley beans and bell beans. Their consumption of barley even led to their derogatory nickname, Hordearii, meaning barley eaters. Galenus of Pergamon, a physician who lived in the 2nd century AD, also describes a beverage specifically made for gladiators. It was made with bone ash and vinegar and was apparently usually served after fights. But are these accounts actually true? Can we believe something that was written down almost 2,000 years ago? To investigate this, we turn to an actual graveyard of gladiators, which was found in 1993 in ancient Ephesus, located in modern-day Turkey. In the next episode, we will focus extensively on this interesting site, so for now let me just tell you that the bones of at least 66 male individuals were excavated, most of which can be regarded as gladiators. They date between the 1st and 3rd century AD and were biochemically analyzed by researchers like our guest today, Fabian Kantz. And maybe you remember how one can find out about dietary habits from bone samples. Since we already talked about stable isotope analysis in episode 4, Meat for Warriors. But here's a quick recap of how it works. Isotopes from different elements of the food we consume are being incorporated into the collagen, the main protein in the bone. It's possible to extract and analyze this collagen from bones. Even after many centuries, this can give us insights on the dietary habits of the diseased. Stable carbon isotopes, for example, provide important information about plant consumption. Among other aspects, the analysis of sulfur isotope ratios indicate seafood intake. And most important for our topic now are the nitrogen values, which reflect on the intake of animal protein like meat and dairy products. For the study of the arena fighters' diet, bone samples of 20 males from the gladiator cemetery were analyzed. Their results were also compared with 20 additional bone samples of non-gladiator males and females excavated from different cemeteries discovered in ancient Ephesus to find out if the gladiator's diet actually differentiated from the one of ordinary citizens. Overall, the stable isotope data of gladiators and ordinary citizens do not differ significantly. All individuals consumed plants like wheat and barley as staple foods. This finding matches the mentioned nickname for the gladiators as barley eaters. Though no significant difference with the non-gladiator individuals was detectable. The collagen of almost all individuals also showed low sulfur ratios. This could indicate that they did not consume much seafood, even though the city was close to the Aegean Sea. Only two gladiators and a female from the same cemetery had relatively high sulfur values, an indication that these three individuals had a different diet and probably consumed more fish and seafood. But now let's examine if the ancient authors and the movie The Game Changers are correct. Did gladiators actually have a mostly vegan diet? And indeed, compared to other Roman sites, the nitrogen levels of the samples from Ephesus are relatively low, indicating lower consumption of animal protein. But there could be an interesting twist to that, since Galenus of Pergamon reported that gladiators did not get much meat, but that beans were an important nutrition component. And this could actually be a probable cause for the depletion of nitrogen, since peas and beans generally have very low nitrogen values and regular consumption of large amounts presumably lowers human nitrogen values considerably. And since peas and beans are relatively rich in protein, a combination with wheat or cereals could have led to a relatively high protein diet. And overall, these analyzed samples indicate that the gladiators appeared to be in a good nutritional state. But with a diet of mainly simple carbohydrates, one can assume that they did not look like the chiseled bodybuilders in the movies, but were rather bulky, which actually could make sense because fat can also protect you from cut wounds and shields nerves and blood vessels. However, two individuals from the gladiator graveyard, or 10% of the samples, show high nitrogen values, indicating a regular consumption of animal proteins. Combined with the varying indications on seafood consumption, this leads to the conclusion that the gladiators from Ephesus were a very diverse group who consumed different kinds of foods. So overall, the stable isotope analysis indicated a mixed diet with a high share of vegetables for the gladiators as well as for the reference group of contemporary Romans. But the additional trace element analysis revealed something unexpected: a significant difference between the strontium-calcium ratios. The levels for the gladiators is almost twice as high as for the ordinary citizens. Since no major difference in their overall diet was detected, a calcium source not detectable in the isotope analysis must be responsible for this anomaly. And so, we come back to Galenus of Pergamon and his description of a gladiator beverage made with bone ash. As I mentioned, a gladiator spent several years in his life in the ludus, the gladiator school. The consumption of this ash beverage during that period could be responsible for the exorbitant strontium-calcium ratios within the gladiator samples, since bone or ash is very rich in calcium. Feeding experiments on rats demonstrated how rapidly strontium supplementation increases its content in the bones. After 5 weeks on a high strontium diet, the rats' ratios had increased by 30 times. Similar studies were conducted on young pigs, mainly to enhance their bone strength. After 5 weeks of a high diet with strontium supplementation, strontium-calcium ratios of the pigs had increased more than fivefold. One could conclude that, like many athletes today taking calcium supplements, also the gladiators drank these ash brews to keep their bones strong. In addition, there is evidence of increased bone density for bone under high mechanical stress. For example, it was observed that modern rugby players had a significantly accelerated formation of bone mineral content due to their intense training. Gladiators also underwent intense and constant training that included fighting, running, and jumping in extra heavy armor and weapons. This caused high mechanical stress on their bones, which then also could be responsible for an accelerated strontium-calcium level. So the situation is not as clear as maybe depicted in the movie The Game Changers, with the gladiators actually showing rather diverse dietary habits. In addition, we need to keep in mind that most Roman citizens were predominantly vegetarian because of the high prices of meat. And especially in regards to gladiators being mostly sentenced offenders, it is highly unlikely that they received, quote, better or more valuable food. As you see, there remain many open questions, which I discussed with today's guest, Dr. Fabian Kantz. Fabian, thank you very much for taking the time. And maybe before we get into the results of the biochemical analysis of the gladiators' bone samples from ancient Ephesus, I just have to ask about your experience appearing in the documentary The Game Changers. For example, how did the contact with the producers get established? Did you get a call from, quote, Hollywood?
In a way, yes. I mean, I think maybe 2 or 3 years before the documentary was even aired, Joseph Pace called me and said he's from Hollywood and they want to make a documentary to reduce the meat consumption in the US. And David Cameron is the James Cameron is the producer. It's a, must be a joke. But then he said, no, that's serious. There's a group of vegans in Hollywood, of prominent vegans, and they want to do something for less meat consumption in the US society. They said, right, it's a good idea. Reducing meat consumption is never the wrong thing.
Yeah, and did you have a chance to meet the other people featured in the movie? Of course, I'm thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know. Not. No.
Okay.
Interestingly, at the beginning, I think Schwarzenegger was not on board, and also Hamilton and Jackie Chan and Djokovic. They just, I think that this was a project which they took a couple of years, and it was developing all the time. So at the end, it was a completely other project, I think, than at the beginning.
Oh, okay. I did not know. Yes. Now, in regards to the diet of the gladiators, I presented what we know from primary sources and results of your team's biochemical analysis. In your opinion, how sure can we be that they indeed had a mostly vegan diet?
Vegan is the wrong thing. And if you listen closely to me in this documentary, The Game Changer, I say predominantly vegetarian, which is something different than vegan. But to be honest, at that time, all Romans have been predominantly vegetarian because meat was very expensive. And I think they had just the chance to eat it a couple of times per year. And for the gladiator, it was quite the same. But of course, we know that there are sources of talking about the predominant food every day, and it was barley and beans. And so I think that fits well with our results and we found.
Yes, that's also my opinion, and that's what I intended to clear up a bit with this episode. And coming to the very interesting results of the trace element analysis, do you think the supplementation of calcium with the bone ash drink was in a way intended? And do we know if the benefits of calcium supplementation with keeping the bones strong was already known in antiquity?
We cannot 100% sure if it was known and fully understand, but there are just a few mentions in the texts, in the historic texts, but there are mentions. For example, in Plinius Naturalis Historia, he mentioned that the fighters after the fight to reduce their muscle pain supplement an ash drink. And I think ash drink fits perfectly because ash is just the mineral which is left over after burning. And today, if you go in an apothec or a drugstore and you buy some fizzy calcium, magnesium tablets for you after sport, it's pretty much the same. If you take the ash and put it in some vinegar and water, and this was the normal drink in the Roman times.
Right, that was it for the first part of our look at Roman gladiators, and in that sense, I hope you were entertained. Remember, for better understanding, for example, on the different types of gladiators, you can head over to Instagram and look at some illustrations of what we discussed in this episode. But we will come back to the skeletons of the arena fighters from ancient Ephesus, because not only were their dietary habits analyzed, but also their specific causes of death. So get ready for a bit of a gory episode when we return with 23 Minutes Archaeology. And in order to keep the podcast going, I would be very grateful for your support on Patreon.